Seinfeld asks what's the deal with airline food, but he is not your savior. Seinfeld made you laugh for 10 years, but he is not your savior. Seinfeld did not want to be a pirate, but he is not your savior. Seinfeld saved the day in Curb Your Enthusiasm, but he is not your savior. Seinfeld co-created a show about nothing, but he is not your savior. But he is not your savior. But he is not your savior. So I saw the Pop-Tarts movie.
I thought that was a Kendrick diss, like certified comedian, certified pedophile. Like, because we didn't, last episode, I don't think anyone talked about Seinfeld dating a teenager.
I was kind of shocked that we didn't bring that up. And yeah, for the record, I'm allowed to be wrong. That movie was a train wreck. I thought it had potential given the success of other animated personification esque movies like the B movie. I'm allowed to be wrong. Apparently it was bad. Wasn't like I was going to see it anyway. Thank you for saving me that headache, Ryan.
Wait, I so guess did this you see it or did you not see it?
No, of course not.
You're being cryptic, so I'm like, what?
I said thank you for saving me the headache.
Right, okay.
Yeah, Anyway, no surprise that a movie like this bombed, I guess. We could stop talking about it, please.
Well,
all right. Well, that's my answer.
This will be the last time I talk about it because okay, for background, you know, I kept mentioning it to Taylor that, hey, it's a thing. And she thought, okay, we might as well check it out. And I said, are you sure? She was like, yeah, no, let's do it. And I was like, okay, fine. And she also wanted to see Baby Reindeer, so it was like, okay, fine, we'll, you know, little did I know that we were going to be dipping our toes in double misery that night, I'll put it to you guys this way, after we saw Unfrosted, I think we spent about an hour trying to, like, reconstitute ourselves, because we felt like we'd been obliterated by sheer stupidity. It was so bad. You know, I kept thinking about pretty much everything Matt and Sebastian said last week about, you know, the state of Jerry Seinfeld's comedy now. And in a lot of ways, it has not aged well, but also it's just not edgy at all. It's like, okay, again, I repeat, you want to be edgy. You want to be different. What do you want to do? I want to make a movie about Pop-Tarts. I want to make it now. But that's not edgy. Like, you could watch the roast of Tom Brady and it's actually edgy. I saw clips of that and I thought, holy crap, that's not what we got with the Pop-Tarts movie. Instead, we got a burial service. It was a funeral with cereal service where somebody died. I think it was the inventor of the Schwinn bicycle. He explodes. And Kellogg's decides to bury him with full cereal honors, where they pour in a bunch of cornflakes, pour a bunch of milk, and then you gotta wait until the casket floats, because that's the prize in the box, because the prize in the box is inside.
What are you talking about?
Ryan, I love you. I love you like a brother. You explaining it is not going to make this any better. Movie is already bad. I don't need a Wikipedia synopsis, but it's you, so it's not that.
Well, nothing
will make this movie better.
It sounds like a stoner kind of movie.
It sounds
like the guy
dumb.
Explodes in a Pop-Tart accident. Like,
but it's not even a good
stoner material.
It's not even a good stoner material. When was the last time you saw Harold and Kumar and thought, oh yeah, this is good. You know what it needs? Everything that doesn't make a movie good. Like, what, not good jokes, and I'm assuming a plot. It sounded like there was the hairline of a plot there.
Yeah.
That didn't live up to much. And Edge, where's the Edge? No Edge.
Well,
so I'm assuming no conflict.
No, there's conflict between Kellogg's and Post trying to make something that'll really blow the
Oh, it blew. It blew.
And that's in the whole testing phase where,
yeah.
At one point, I think a Nazi is helping them, and then Bobby Moynihan is Chef Boyardee, and they create a mutant pastry made out of a sea monkey. Believe me, the more I explain it, the more I keep wondering if this is just the ramblings of a madman.
It is.
The coup de grace of it all that I think I texted you guys about was, so there's this whole undercurrent about the Kellogg's mascots basically feeling like they're not being treated well by Seinfeld's character played by he plays this guy, I think his name's like Robert Cabana, basically like one of the head people at Kellogg's. And they got Hugh Grant as this real person, as this, like, stuffy English theater guy who's like, you know, oh, I'm Tony the Tiger. You know, and you get to see, like, there's so many little things that you see, quote-unquote, the invention of, like, Melissa McCarthy is working with NASA, she makes an orange drink, she's like, here, try it, and Jerry goes, it's got a little bit of tang to it, and she's like, I like that idea, I like that.
Oh, God.
And then there's a similar one with...
So it's just an excuse for food puns?
Food puns and...
Or is it like an origin story? I don't understand.
I kept thinking this while I was watching it, because Matt brought up the point of all these other movies that it's similar to, and you mentioned The Founder. It is an attempt at a satirized version of that, except it's supposed to be a satirized version of the creation of the Pop-Tart. And, you know, like, it suggests that the origins of the Pop-Tart and even the Rice Krispie Treat stem from children going through the dumpster trucks at Post and Kellogg and combining things together to eat them because they like to hang out in dumpsters. And at one point, they make the Rice Krispie Treats, and Jerry tries it. He literally pulls a gob out of a kid's hand, tries it, and he's like, it's not bad. And then, like, you even get to see the creation of the "they're great" line. All the mascots decide, you know, we need to go on strike. They're not treating us well. And when they do, Hugh Grant's character, because Hugh Grant plays the guy who's Tony the Tiger, strips down his costume and resembles the QAnon shaman. And then the rest of the sequence is almost scene for scene like what I saw sitting on my couch like a lazy bum on January 6th, 2021, watching CNN. And my parents are squabbling about something, and I'm like, hey, guys, they're, like, storming the Capitol right now. Like, I've never seen this before. And at first they were like, oh, okay. And then I was like, yo, this is happening. And they were like, uh-huh, oh, wow, oh my God. And the reason for why they're storming Kellogg's is so they can stop the certification of what is then called the Trat Pop. And the reason why it's called that is because Walter Cronkite is so fixated on his silly putty that he messes up his notes, loses his notes, and has to look at the silly putty, and he reads it backwards, and it says Pop-Tart, to which Jerry's like, Pop-Tart? Well, it's a Pop-Tart! You know, and Jim Gaffigan's like... So, it's just... And Amy Schumer... Apparently, her character's got some connection to Mar-a-Lago, because, of course, we gotta make this movie about Trump when it's supposed to be about the... Pop-Tart.
You see, I didn't think it could be possibly that bad that I would avoid doing a hate watch, but now I can't... I don't think I can even hate watch this. It's...
No, it's it sounds boring.
It's just...
Ew.
Like, I'll put it this way, I'm definitely gonna
Where's the substance?
This.
Where's the beef?
Well, Kendrick and Drake have the beef right now, so.
Yeah.
You a Trap Pop, I'm a Pop-Tart, yeah.
Oh my God. One of the, like, honestly, I thought the Munsters movie was bad, was the one of the worst things I've seen, if not the worst. This, I genuinely can't believe that I've finally seen the end of the tunnel. And that was why I had to repeat my dear good friend. And I gotta pull up his contact because I've unfortunately forgotten his full name. It's been so long. I had to quote my good friend who years ago he texted me. This was back when I was in high school. He texted me when he saw Paul Blart, Mall Cop. And he, him and his family, they're big movie people. And he texted me. His friend's name is Roble Hussein Abdi Douali Smail Yusuf Raga Hassan Afi Sahal Farah. I've mentioned Roble before on the show, but I figured for laughs, there you go, there's his full name. But he had said to me, and this is what I had said in the chat, which is, cinema is dead.
Don't you be dissing the first Paul Blart movie at me. I know you're not dissing the first Paul Blart movie. The second one,
it wasn't
fully okay.
It wasn't bad.
First Paul Blart was good.
I don't think it was bad. It was funny. It was serviceable. That's what it was. You go into a movie and you're like, this is the movie to hate watch.
No,
the
Paul Blart was like pure, like family friendly, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Like 2007, 2008 comedy. That's what movies were back then for like families.
See,
and out of the ones that were like surprisingly, like actually pretty decent, Paul Blart was surprisingly good.
Yeah. And any rational person, after this episode airs, any rational person would think, wow, that movie must be bad in the way it was described just now. Let's never watch it or talk about it again. So I ask you three, please?
I'll watch it in a comment on a random Instagram reel where somebody posts the whole thing in GIF form like they do for B-movie.
Yeah.
Oh,
same.
Okay. See, that's fine. I just, I guess I just don't need an impassioned... retelling of what's already like common knowledge at this point, like, oh, Jerry, a comedian who's lost his way and doesn't know how to be funny anymore. I know, let's make a movie that is emblematic of everything of that. It's going to be good, right? See, a sensible person would say no and not watch it anyway. Or am I thinking too hard into this?
Well, I will say this.
I understand that you want to give him one last chance. And to be fair, but my words of the last episode ring true in the fact that, okay, all-star, for the most part, cast. It looked interesting.
No, no,
hey,
no.
We gave it an 85%.
Wrong. I'm sorry. I'm calling that
okay.
One.
Hey, no. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I am wrong because it is bad. But it sounded, based off the names that they got, that it had... I don't know, potential at least. And his track record of movies like this has been okay. You can't blame me for coming to that conclusion. It's bad. We know that. We can put it to bed. And I don't know. I don't think Jerry at this point has any fear of being canceled at this point. He just is in fear of making another one of these stinkers. So
it's one of those movie 42 money laundering deals. I mean, where they have contracts where they have to, you know, like, you have to be in my movie.
Yeah, he could do the Sandler thing, the conspiracy theory that he only makes these movies to go on vacation.
Which makes him the real genius here, honestly.
Yeah.
He made this movie to have Pop-Tarts? Like, I don't understand what the theory would be.
Yeah.
I mean, the argument I made last week...
I think maybe Seinfeld made this movie so that we could hate him and be canceled and then he doesn't have to work again.
Well, and he doesn't have to. Like, this was the guy that was one of the co-creators, writers, and stars of the number one show of the 90s. And at the height of their powers, he decided, let's cancel it. You know, like, there's that Larry King interview. We mentioned Larry King last week. But there's that Larry King interview where he's basically like, you know, were you canceled? And Jerry, like...
flips out.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't even say he was polite about it. He was like, you're calling us canceled? We were the number one show on TV! And it's like, yeah, but, like, you could have kept going. Like, what's the deal with that, Mr. Comedian? You know, like, or maybe I gotta do this to do my Larry King, you know, like,
No, see, there's not enough lights
complete
behind
with the shoulders.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but no, I mean, And on top of that, like, you know, there were a few little minor Seinfeld references. Like, at one point, he does do the equivalent of when he would go, Newman! And I've already forgotten now what he did it to. It wasn't about Post. But then, and then, like, the whole time he's telling this story, it's to a little runaway kid. Like, the movie starts with this kid with a bandana, and he's wrapping up some things, puts it on a stick, and then he goes to a diner. And as it, like, all the kids in this movie act like adults. It's really weird. It's also really dumb. But he goes up to the you know, counter at the diner, and he's like, you know, he says something to the, whatever, the guy that works there, and he's basically like, you know, get me a milk, make it a double, you know, it's like, and next to him is Jerry in a turtleneck, and then he proceeds to tell him the full story, and then by the end of it, you find out this little kid's name, this little boy, who ran away from home to spend an unfortunate amount of time listening to Jerry Seinfeld. You find out that this kid's parents, they come in and they go, George?
Mm.
And you just, and obviously it probably wasn't a Seinfeld, like, George Costanza reference, but it
so
still
dumb.
Was like,
they knew what they were doing.
Of
they
all
knew
the
what
names,
doing,
Jerry, that you could have
don't
picked.
Don't even say it. Yeah.
Little Boswell. Yeah.
And then, of course, they had Kennedy in there because it wouldn't be Jerry Seinfeld without something with Kennedy. And frankly, the only comedian that was actually, like, kind of sort of funny in the whole movie, which was Bill Burr doing just not even Kennedy Massachusetts accent, but just generic Massachusetts accent. Like, he said, we got to go to Cuba. Kennedy did not say that, my guy. Like, and I'm not even from this state, and I can judge you on that. Like, no, he said Cuba. Andrew, we went to the library, and we needed to make sure that we went to Cuba. Come on, man! Like, oh,
man!
It's like little things, like, you've got all this detail, and yet you just, yeah, with a few of them.
Mm,
well, but anyway.
Seinfeld, more like Seinfeld. Oh.
Nice. How long did it take you to come up with that one, Matt?
How long have we been recording now?
Almost a half hour, maybe.
The oral history of the Unfrosted. You know, like, also, Unfrosted Pop-Tarts are the fucking worst. Sorry for the language. Like,
hell yeah.
Hit them with a passion. Like,
hit them where it hurts, Drew.
Seinfeld's like, probably never said the F word, but yeah. Like,
the first Pop-Tart I ever tried was back in 2003, I believe. They had the SpongeBob Pop-Tarts, which
were
like
gas.
Frosted blue on the top. They had like SpongeBob sprinkles, but they were strawberry flavored. So those are the first Pop-Tarts I ever had. And they were delicious, although now my go-to is probably going to be the s'mores ones.
God.
Those are solid. But Unfrosted,
man,
is terrible.
That is such a horrible flavor.
I
said what I said. Brown sugar's the best. Anyway.
Yeah.
It is one of their top sellers. That
it
brown
is?
Sugar and I think strawberry are their two.
Ugh. I think. Disgusting. See, that's where
I know
me.
Brown sugar is like one of the top.
Yeah,
you get like that modified fruit flavor and you think to yourself, yeah, what I'm eating is bad, but how can we make it taste more chemically? At least when I take a bite into a maple brown sugar, I feel like I'm eating oatmeal from my days as a kid, because my mom wouldn't buy me Pop-Tarts. She'd get me like those little dinosaur oatmeal, like egg.
Oh, hell
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? At 22, I was still eating those. So just
I had
to
those
show.
Last year. Yeah, they're good.
Oh, hell yeah. See?
Should have made a movie about that.
We came up with better content than Jerry could in all of his years of film and television in
Jurassic
6 minutes?
Yeah, we could have done something.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Make a better movie, please.
I cannot recommend
make a better movie
it.
Or give up. Or give up.
Well, it's, again, I think, you know, I ended up watching, you know, and this, I'll try and wrap this portion up here. I did watch a review by one film critic, Dan Merle, who, he said a lot of the same stuff that we said last week. The only difference was he saw the movie, or at least had seen it.
It's like the only reviewer that saw it.
I know, well, a lot of the reviews, and I know, Matt, you brought this point up, like, a lot of the reviews for this were not great. I know in the very beginning it was, like everything else, sharply divided, but as time has gone on, I think the consensus is like, Jerry made a big stink about cancel culture, and this was his answer to that. You know, like I don't think it had anything to do with...
I have a theory. He made this movie so tame as a form of insurance so that when he does eventually get canceled, we can look back on this movie and basically say, wow, what a movie that took no risks, was not good, and was just playing it safe throughout. He can't be that bad of a guy, right?
Well, and
you
even
know, like
Taylor kept asking, is this a kids movie? Is this for adults? And like, to be honest with you guys, for most of the movie, I couldn't tell. Like, even I was like, what? This should be easy for me, but it's not. Like, you know, you have Double Entendres by Amy Schumer, and you're like, okay, that would not be in a kids movie. Maybe like a 90s kids movie, but not in a 2020s kids movie. Granted, how often do I watch 2020s kids movies? Ever. But then again, you got little like references here and there. And again, you've got a whole January 6th section of the movie, and you're just like, what? And all these Jack LaLanne jokes, and it's like, what 20-year-old cares who Jack LaLanne is? Who's Jack LaLanne? Yeah, it was bad. But I think I'll be okay, guys. I'll let you know in a week.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine. You just can't take stock in counting on movies from disgruntled comedians and actors. It's easy. All you gotta do is just disengage.
Oh no, this was something where I went into it. I mean, honestly, for the most part, a lot of movies these days I go into with low expectations. I mean, I mentioned it in our Civil War review. I had low expectations, and I came out being like, oh, that was pretty good. That was great. Wow. Right. Okay. And with this one, it was the same deal. I went in with very low expectations, and the only joke out of what was supposed to be a comedy was, again, in reference to all the January 6th stuff, when Hugh Grant's character is testifying and someone's like, oh, you know, we heard that when you broke into the Kellogg's building, you defecated somewhere. And he's like, ooh, well, I did have some bran flakes in the morning. Everything else, there was just, like, for a comedy full of comedians. I mean, hell, John Hamm and what's-his-face that plays Howard Stark, they both play their characters from Mad Men in this movie. And, like, they were arguably funnier than the rest of the film. You know, Christian Slater, Hugh Grant, they're in the movie. They're not comedians. They were decent. They were fine with what they were working with. You know, they were serviceable, but they weren't funny. Everybody else, I mean, Amy Schumer, funny, really?
So that's the best soundbite we've ever gotten this year, and it's only May. Can we please clip that? See, Ryan, when you say it with your chest, it doesn't it feel good?
It makes me feel good knowing this is going to be the last time I ever talk about this movie, because even Taylor was like screaming at me, no, please, no more. Stop talking about it. And then, like, I swear to you guys, at one point I said to her, you know, I'm ready to watch Velvet Buzzsaw just to cleanse my eyes and my brain.
I will leave.
Our eyes were so in like acid that you use to get your nails done. Like, it was, oh.
See, that's a movie that's bad for the right reasons. I don't think I wouldn't consider that a palate cleanser. But then again, the question is, what would be? And I don't have the mental capacity to answer
Cars, that. Anything?
Speaking of palate Cars. Cleansers, Drew, did you ever watch Civil War?
I didn't. It was we struggled to make it to the movie theater, so haven't seen it yet. I'm trying to get no spoilers, but I hear it's about journalism.
Oh yeah,
that's one word for it.
Oh yeah. So, all right, well, At least the saga of the pop turd is finally behind us. Thank goodness. Now, before, I don't know if you guys want to talk about the other topic now, or do we want to save that for the end and then Matt's review of a recent release that I'm hoping to God is much better than Unfrosted. I don't know in which order you guys want to do those in.
I defer to the peanut gallery.
I was going to say, to answer your question, the bar was already pretty low. So even if this unnamed movie that will be named shortly is, you know, when we talk about it, there's going to be a lot more material to work with. So I think we'll be fine.
Twisters?
Yeah.
So would we like to talk about monkeys or...
Oh, yeah.
That was my question.
Yeah, we saw a movie. We saw a movie, Matt.
So we saw Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes together.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, he really wined and dined me. It was a fun night.
Wined and dined in 59. I'm not quite getting to the 69, but we were close.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, so I hit up Sebastian. I'm like, yo. What are you doing on Tuesday? And he's like, nothing. Why? It's like, cool, you're coming with me to go watch some monkeys.
Oh, so, yeah, make it sound like I have no social life. I mean, you're right, but make it sound that way. Why don't you? Anyway. Yeah,
he was practically falling out of the house saying, please take me to see some atmosphere.
I was going to say, he took me to my old stomping grounds, undisclosed, of course, and... we did see some apes. It was a good time.
So yeah,
never
so...
saw any of the other Planet of the Apes movies. So it was a first experience.
So we got up to some monkey business. The theater that we were actually in was like one of those like really nice IMAX ones where you can like recline the seats without getting your fingers chopped off.
Nice.
Some of you will understand what I'm referencing there.
Yeah.
But
R.I.P.
It's funny because like literally the day before I was at IMAX headquarters to watch another movie, which I will talk about shortly. And it's like, yo, why is the theater in this random ass AMC nicer than the one in actual IMAX headquarters? Why is it? But anyway, yeah, we saw Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which I thought was really good because I liked the Planet of the Apes movies, at least the more recent series. I've never seen the originals, although people were telling me that I should watch them because they're good. And it's honestly like one of the most storied franchises in Hollywood history. Like you've got the classics, which were like the Charlton Heston ones. You've got the shitty reboots, which were the Tim Burton series that I think also spun off its continuations that weren't by him. And then you have like the new age stuff, which is Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, War for the Planet of the Apes. And like when the first one came out, Rise, it was like, yo, this title is entirely too long. This movie's going to be shit. And you look at the apes and they kind of look like semi-plasticky, like they're close to looking realistic, but it's still got that uncanny valley. And you also never see their dicks hanging out. So it's like, huh. They weren't quite anatomically accurate.
Yeah, man, it really kind of sucked for me at that point. And you know, to Matt's credit, I didn't see one dick in the whole movie. So
there were a couple of monkey nipples, but no dicks.
But that's not what I came for, though. You know, I'm kidding.
Anyway, like I thought, like those were surprisingly good movies, and then so I've been a fan since. And then like when the third one ended, I'm like, okay, cool, we're done with the series. And then they continued it on with Kingdom, which I thought was fun. If you've seen the others, it's on that same level. It's not as emotionally impactful because like you're starting the story over. It's not like you're seeing Caesar again and you've had time to like become emotionally invested in Caesar and everything that he's like gone through. I don't think the villains are quite as good. Like they set up like the main Proximus Caesar villain and like a lot of the promotional material to be like this charismatic villain who's omnipresent. He's not. He's maybe in like five scenes and that's it. Mostly it's like his lackeys who are the main villains, honestly, and it's They're not even like really promoted very much at all. Like if you look at the pr like I looked at the press releases of it, they don't even mention like the actors who are playing like his lackeys who are actually doing the villainous shit. This guy's pretty much standing there pontificating, which was a good performance. It was great. It was fun. Like he was very he had that riz, that monkey riz. But like that's not a main villain. He's kind of just like, oh, he's here too. And I think like with this movie at least, with the human storyline, it kind of fell into the same trap as the Godzilla movies, I feel like, where it's like, I don't give a shit about the humans. Just give me the CGI monkey shit. Yeah. There's also a lot of like, I wouldn't say like, there's a little bit of a philosophical aspect to it. It's like, oh, these are monkeys, but they're doing the same things that humans are doing. Or it's like, oh, Caesar's dead and they're perverting his legacy and like they're using the legacy of Caesar to their own means when like that's not what he said. It's like, oh, look, it's Christianity, but monkey form. So there's a little bit of light philosophical thinking to do. It's not just like pure adrenaline explosion, CGI slugfest of particle effects on screen, which are great. I mean, there's enough of that in Apes, but like when the alternatives have been just like, oh, let's go see another substandard Marvel movie again, because that's all that's playing at the theater now. Like, Apes is much better of a thing to invest your time into. Sebastian, say words. You were there
Oh,
too.
line. Oh, line. Oh, okay. Yeah. First impressions. Well, I guess my first impressions was I grossly underestimated how many people needed to be there for work. I think I don't know. 8 out of 8 side conversations that we heard in the theater were all about like how someone was writing for such and such piece, or someone was looking to watch this movie to commentate on such and such podcast, or whatever banal YouTube channel you want to spread your media commentary on, go right ahead. I mean, it's a free country. And we had some pretty good conversations about that before the movie started, but it was a, I want to say it was a fun experience, and I think that's just testament
We snuck
to, you
candy
know,
into a
not,
theater.
hey, don't tell them. I don't want to go to jail. I can't go back to jail, man. It wouldn't be right. Anyway,
I mean, I can't go back to Texas, which I've never been to, so.
did Matt just indict Sebastian?
Oh, he has a habit. What can I say?
Sebastian did everything right, folks.
I did everything right and they indicted me.
I did. You don't know where I'm recording from. Don't
I was
scrub the
the candy mule
metadata.
in this, I will say. I was the mule.
Philosophical. Oh yeah. It was a good movie. Like I said, it was my first Planet of the Apes movie. I think for what the film contained, I'm really like struggling with my words here, as if I just didn't see the movie. I really do think that I'm struggling because I don't really have a lot of basis to go off of, and the film revolving around Caesar wasn't necessarily a sticking point for me because, well, so much as it was just subtext that I didn't have. You know, Caesar is portrayed as this godlike entity that no wrong, and I couldn't help but scratch my head wondering, oh, who's Caesar? Of course, I'm not going to Google that in the middle of the premiere, which, by the way, it was probably the most luxurious premiere I think I've ever seen. The seats adjusted back. Never in my life could I ever feel like I'm collecting Social Security while sitting on my lazy boy. Unlike that night, it was great. I even spilled my popcorn on the way back to my ba on the way back from the bathroom, and it really drove home the point of this feels like I'm watching Law and Order reruns as my wife gets back from the supermarket. But back to the movie, 2 hours and 25 minutes, pretty decent runtime. I can safely say that, unlike most movies I've seen in the theater, I didn't once feel as if I was getting put to sleep. And while the beginning exposition segments were a little bit cumbersome and long, I found myself walking away and enjoying it quite a bit.
You also made that fun comparison to Horizon.
So my role in this part of the show was to essentially piggyback off of your piggybacking of watching this movie. A little birdie told me that you wrote an article, and that's what I wanted to go into today.
I mean, that little birdie was me.
Yeah, it was. But I gotta say, it did feel like the red carpet treatment was rolled out for us. We were taken out of line. Basically, the ticket taker was like, "You two here for the premiere?" She like pushes the two people in front of us out of the way, and she's like, "You two, come here, come get your free popcorn," kind of thing. So, I guess you could say it felt to be better than, I. When you linked me this article, Matt, and I saw the Horizon Zero Dawn joke, I immediately, admittedly, got a little bit salty because I wasn't credited. Thanks for stealing my thunder.
You're welcome. Anytime.
But so you wrote an article. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is a stunning successor to Caesar's Legacy. I was originally hoping when I read this article that I would get some context as to who Caesar was, kind of fit two and two together. But other than that, I'll go ahead and read some of my favorite talking points. Well, your favorite talking points. While what is intended to be as a guarded stoicism necessary for her survival ultimately comes off as bland acting. Oh, I'm sorry. This is in reference to Nova slash May, the human character.
If you've seen The
Well,
Witcher,
what?
it's the girl who plays Ciri.
Yeah, and sorry, I thought my phone just did that thing where if it hears her voice, it activates.
It did that. I think I was talking to a friend about going to, like, something about this, and I mentioned her, and then it like popped up saying, "No, not you. I was talking about The Witcher."
While it makes sense for her character, Nova slash May, to prioritize her safety and goals, her constantly guarded speech, mannerisms, and actions aren't interesting compared to Noah's quest to save his clan. See, that's valid considering throughout the first part that we see here, it's really like the second act of the movie, she barely says anything at all. If anything, I think her first audible dialogue is a scream. So you're exactly right, Matt. What's intended to be guarded stoicism necessary for her survival unfortunately comes off as bland acting. Wholeheartedly agree, especially in contrast with the more prominent personalities of the apes. The apes stole the show. I mean, it's in the title, so you come to expect that. Durand is captivating, delivers his lines with the self-righteous zeal, and I'm kind of popcorning between different sections. Durand is captivating, delivering his lines with the self-righteous zeal of a ruthless leader who truly believes that the ends justify the means. Unfortunately, despite Proximus's influence being felt throughout the film and his prominence in the marketing, there is precious little of him actually in it, such that he almost seems like an afterthought. Yeah, I really thought that the big ape in the beginning that completely leveled their clan was the big bad guy. I thought that's who he was after initially. Until he met his demise, which was pretty terrifying.
Spoiler.
Looking back on it, yeah. I mean, hey, bad guys lose. It's a thing about cinema, right? All right. Well, though relatively one-dimensional, Dorville's performance is full of brutal animalistic fury. I see what you did there. An unquestioning devotion to his king, making him an enjoyable character to hate. Where's the Horizon Zero Dawn line so that way I can claim copyright infringement?
It's where I talk about, I think,
There it
the
is. Yeah,
visionism.
my favorite moments feature the crumbling and overgrown ruins of skyscrapers and the scenes of apes effortlessly climbing them reminded me heavily of the Horizon Forbidden West game. Both beautiful pieces of media. I will say this movie triumphs the latter because the story felt like it was progressing. And I don't want to hear any comments about how Horizon Zero Dawn is a good game. It is a good game artistically and functionally, as in it functionally it plays as a game. If you can get past the content loop, of mundanity, I'm sure you'd come to enjoy it. Matt, did you enjoy Horizon?
I enjoyed the first one. The second one, like I played the shit out of the first one. I bought all the DLC and played
Okay.
it. And then you get to the second one and it's just like a slog. Like it's beautiful and it's fun, but it's just like there's too much game. Just let
Yeah,
me finish this
that's.
story so I can move on to something else. And I don't know if
I was
that's a
gonna say.
factor of me just wanting to play God of War or me just not having enough time to devote to it or what it was, but it's just like, oh, there's so much to do. There's too much.
Yeah, that's as much confirmation bias as I needed. Again, beautiful game. I wouldn't play it again.
I
Anyway,
did
back
not
to the
buy
movie.
the DLC for this one.
Well, so I have a question about the, what is it, the character of, is it Freya? I have Matt's review in
Freya.
front of me.
Yeah.
Or Nova, rather. Freya Allen is the actress. So are they at a point, because I've seen the original films, and I did see the one Tim Burton remake, which I think is just a stand, like, it's unrelated to anything else. It's just a standalone
I
thing.
think it spawned like a series, like a direct-to-video series or something. I think.
Okay.
From what I remember, I could be wrong, but I
I
seem
don't.
to remember that.
I kind of have a. I shouldn't say, like, I'm certainly not, like, a big fan of the Apes franchise, but, like, it's always been, like, kind of interesting. I have seen all of the original films, all five of them, I think. And the first three are pretty good. The fourth one tries to be great, and the fifth one is kind of a snooze fest. Caesar's technically in two and a fraction of the original five, but I guess I'm just curious, knowing that this is, I'm assuming that the reboot franchise, which, incorporates the previous trilogy, and I think from what I just saw, just kind of, looking on the internet, that Disney and Fox have said that this current film is supposed to be the start of another trilogy that will, honor the legacy of the previous three, but presumably, I don't know how you get to that point, but presumably, like, still pay homage, or at the very least kind of close the loop to the original film. Is Nova's character, I don't know, 'cause it's hard to describe it, which is ironic because the character, from what it sounds like, Matt, you said that, she has guarded speech and, like, she's very stoic but bland, and it's like, well, is she supposed to be like the humans in the first Apes movie from way back when, the first Planet of the Apes, don't speak. They're kind of dim-witted, and I mean, they're basically like cattle. Like,
Oh
the
no.
apes.
Oh no. These humans specifically. Okay. Is this where the spoiler warning goes up? I guess.
Spoiler warning.
I mean, I have an
There
idea
you
where
go.
this all ends, and it ends
Okay.
with Charlton Heston going, "Doomsday," and then the whole planet blows up.
So,
I mean,
you
also,
get in.
this part, I think what you're going to say is also in
Spoilers
the
to a film from the
trailers.
60s.
And
Okay,
I think it's in the
so.
trailer mostly, so I think you're probably safe to talk about it.
Okay, so you get to a point in the movie where May and Noah have this sort of mutual understanding, and I think they even hint at it a few times, being like, what was the livelihood of humans and apes? Did they coexist? How were they side by side? And it isn't until they get into what's essentially just a nuclear bunker, an abandoned silo, I guess, like mountainside nuclear bunker, converted into residential complexes, basically sheltering them from the inside, from the outside, where the three chimps stumble across a book, a children's book, which catalog just how apes were living, quote unquote, side by side to man. And of course, we know this as Zeus. And essential, you know, if you want to get metaphorical, subservience. You know, apes didn't speak. Humans did. What a role reversal, right? And before this revelation, and in the relationship that forms between May and Noah through their shared, I guess, trauma as they go on this adventure, you come to, you know, maybe come to the conclusion that, oh, maybe they can coexist in building this new world. It would make sense, right? They stumble upon this book. Noah learns the truth. And at the end of the book, when they do meet up one final time, you know, as they both say goodbye to each other, it's cordial, it's not friendly, because they go their separate ways, having both discovered the truth about, you know, what it means to raise a clan now that Noah is effectively their leader now, and what it means for humans being the last of their species in surviving on this planet. Nova takes some sort of hard disk that she retrieves from the silo or bunker or whatever, and she goes to another bunker full of humans doing some, it's like radar and sonar equipment. They're attempting to communicate with other people. And this is like the final piece of the puzzle, guys. Like, this is it. This is the one thing that's gonna shoot their satellites into space. And I swear to God, if we get Space Apes Volume 7 or whatever, I'm gonna fucking lose it. Admittedly, that's where I thought it was going, because the last shot is of the apes looking up into a telescope in space. And I said, I swear to God, they put these fucking things on Mars, I'm gonna lose it. But no, there are humans in the end scene wanting to establish contact with other humans. They're, of course, looking after their own interests and just trying to piece together the fragmented bits and pieces of humanity. And what I thought was a complete and total just nothing burger is the fact that May gives this hard disk to these people and then just kind of walks away. They're supposed to have one big final shot of the satellites finally activating and these radars finally working and communication has finally been established. Yay. But for a character, a young girl who has been separated from her own kind for as long as she can remember, because I believe she even says that her parents didn't make it, I struggled to really find myself wondering why she didn't stay with the only people who could provide some context as to what she can do now as a human. Because she doesn't go live with the apes. No, that would, you know, the whole coexisting thing would make too much sense. So it just kind of left me wondering, well, what are we to do? You know, because in the beginning of the movie, the apes fear the humans. They call them echoes. They're like, oh, they're bad. They're bad news. And at the end of the movie, they're still segregated. Like, they're not... I guess I just thought that this adventure would solidify the fact that coexistence can work, but if they're both going to go on their separate paths anyway, it didn't come full circle for me as I think... as much as I wanted it to.
Well, they got to set up the sequels.
Sure. Yeah, they've been great at doing that. Point still stands. Why? If they're not going to at least show the fact that, like, you know, if the hero's journey's result is coexistence, and they've established that a little bit through the adventure, but they can't reconcile their differences in the end game, I feel like a sequel is just going to be the same movie again.
Well, that's been my almost curiosity with everything after the second movie, which is how do you keep this franchise going without it feeling either repetitive or, you know, I kind of expect them, once they get to a sixth movie, just make the sixth movie a remake of the original Charlton Heston film, like, which honestly doesn't deserve a remake, and let's face it, it's already been remade and it didn't do well. Hey, Monkey Man, say hi to your mother for me. But like,
Dear God.
you
Well,
know.
also, I really need to drive home the point that as much as this movie absolutely milks Caesar's legacy, the one damning line in this movie is when Noah is getting some more explanation about Caesar from Rajak. Is that his name?
Raka, Raka.
Raka, excuse me. Who was, essentially the last, I don't want to say last of Caesar's kind. They're all monkeys. Come on. I mean, they're different clans, but he's the one essentially cataloging and archiving Caesar, back when he was alive.
Yeah.
Raka basically says something along the point of, Caesar saw the benefit in coexistence with humans. Like he was able to do it. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, okay, so we have this new protagonist. Through his journey, he's going to be able to come to that same conclusion and everything's going to be hunky dory. I mean, the world's already gone to shit. You may as well work together. Right? No, wrong. Okay, if we're in this era of Hollywood where movies and media don't need to necessarily have happy endings anymore, which by and large, I'm all for. I think it makes it much more interesting. I don't think you can get away with it here, where, as Ryan, you're saying that you're struggling with it too. You're essentially circling back to all the previous movies doing the exact same thing.
And as well, the issue with the original five movies is that it's kind of the same problem that the Terminator films have, where it's all cyclical, where and again, spoilers for movies that have been out since, all of our parents were like kids, but you have the first two Planet of the Apes movies. The first one, obviously, Charlton Heston goes off into space with his buddies from NASA or wherever, and they go to a planet, and they're like, oh my God, it's a planet, and they have fun and whatever, and they all get killed except for Charlton Heston, who, leads a uprising against the, ape overlords, and then by the end of the movie, the scientist apes that are his friends are like, oh, he doesn't know the truth, and then that's when he finds the Statue of Liberty, and you get the whole classic sequence of, you blew it up, damn you all to hell, and then the second film, another astronaut comes and finds Charlton Heston, and then, and this is, I guess this is where future films could potentially dive more into the mythology, which is, I want to say there's like mutated humans that sort of were able to maintain their intelligence and not, basically become chattel to the apes. But they've also created underground bunkers and nuclear warheads. And the movie basically ends with, again, Charlton Heston blowing up the planet with nukes.
It's doomsday. The end of the world.
And then you find out that those two scientists that he was pals with go back in time to the 1960s, and the whole planet, it's like The Odd Couple, except it's a chimp man and a chimp woman, and everyone's like, wow, these talking monkeys, this is great, and then you find out one of them, it's like Zira and Cornelius. I might not be, I don't know. I saw these movies when I was like 13. Anyway. You find out that the female ape is pregnant, and mind you, the whole time in the first and maybe the second movie, again, I don't remember, but at least in the first, they talk about this mythic character, Caesar, who leads the uprising, of the apes and helps take over Earth. And by the end of the movie, there's some snafu that essentially leads to these two scientists getting gunned down. It's pretty brutal. But you do find out that the female ape did give birth, and she gave the baby to this like circus owner played by Ricardo Montalban, Khan from Star Trek, somebody my mom's met, And you find out they named their baby Caesar. And the movie ends with a real chimpanzee, and they edited it so that it looks like this baby chimpanzee is talking. And the chimp is holding onto these bars in a circus, like, kind of storage space. And they edited the footage so it's basically they added in sound so that it sounds like the chimpanzee is going, "Mama, mama." And you're like, "Oh, there's a talking monkey on planet Earth. What's going to happen?" And then the next movie, it's basically the Russian Revolution, except it's Caesar, and, you know, he's like, "We are the ones that take over." And then the last one, it comes full circle, more or less, by the fifth movie. So, again, you either play with that mythology, or you just do your own thing. So, the whole Caesar reverence, from what you guys have told me, sounds pretty on point. I guess it's just a question of, are they gonna eventually remake the first movie, or are they gonna get to the point where they just blow up the planet and you find the mutant humans? And,
you know, it sounds, you know, I've actually only seen the Wahlberg, the Lincoln statue ending, and like, oh, which as a kid blows your mind, and then people, we grow up and they're like, "Oh, it's cringy," and I'm like, "Well, okay, as a kid I thought it was interesting." But I wonder if it's just the same problem the Terminator franchise has, where it's just like Terminator Genesis, like, oh, he's back, and it's just like, nobody, I guess there is no Caesar figures, I guess, in the Terminator franchise, if you want to call Schwarzenegger that, but it just kind of reminds me of like
John Connor.
I don't know, it's just like the franchise problem, but not saying it's a problem, but just kind of reminds me of like, you know, where do they go from here? But I don't know, it just kind of reminds me of how what you're talking about, the hype that I had for Terminator Salvation, I believe, the one with Christian Bale, where like, nice, we're gonna get robot wars for an hour and a half, and then there was like a love story between a woman and a robot, and then it's just like, I want an ape movie like that, where it's just like, just show me them fighting. No humans, please. Like, I think that, like, the human angle. So it just reminds me of these Terminator movies that they always have to, you know, every movie, I guess. Like, yeah, you have to put your story in there. But, yeah, man, I just want to see apes fighting.
And watch there is plenty of that. And watch boxing, you know, MMA. You know, there's televised and monetized sports at your fingertips.
I don't want the human subplots anymore. I can't think of the last movie I had that didn't have a human subplot. You know, like even Transformers, like Transformers 3 opens up with like the Allspark War, and it's just like it was 5 minutes of robot action, and then it was just, you know, McDreamy pops in. So it's like,
yeah, but then how are you supposed to shoehorn your man fucks environment message?
Who cares? Look at Mad Max. What message Fury Roach? Yeah.
I love the one note answers and the one note questions. This show's evolving.
So I can't, the embargo for Furiosa has not lifted yet, but I can zip through what I was going to say real quick. So I got to see the screening of that on Monday at the IMAX headquarters, which I didn't know IMAX headquarters existed until then. Their theater is nice, but not nearly as nice as the AMC Burbank 16 IMAX theater. That's a for nice sure. theater. So also, they have a Batman statue outside of their theater. IMAX does not. They have nice posters, but they have nice bathrooms too. But anyway, so Furiosa, I thought was... I can't say a lot about it. I thought it was good. It's not as like actiony as Fury Road. It still has plenty of that, but it's also like a lot more delving into the character of stuff. What's interesting is that like he wrote Furioso before he shot Fury Road, because they wrote Fury Road and they're like, wait, all the exposition's kind of like just dumped in there on the fly. We need to actually like have a way to understand who these characters are and who Furiosa is. So we wrote the script for Furiosa, made everybody read it before they shot Fury Road, and then they shot Fury Road, and then now they're doing Furiosa. It was originally supposed to be an anime, honestly. That's what he wanted to do with it, except there were a lot of just production delays from Warner Brothers. So by the time that Fury Road actually got made, it no longer made sense for them to do another, to do an anime. They might be a third one coming in this series, which is going to look at like the year before Fury Road happens, what Max was doing instead of what Furiosa was doing. Chris Hemsworth is absolutely bonkers, but in a very good way. Anya Taylor-Joy, I will watch anything she's in. She is, I think she does a good job. Like, she doesn't speak a whole lot. She very much is like the stoic protagonist, but in a good way, and like kind of like what you would expect from a Mad Max movie. But she also does a very good job of just being very expressive with just the quiet rage and vengeance quest that she has. It's got a lot of, it's I think a much more complex and like complete emotional journey film than Fury Road, which was just, hey, let's drive somewhere, hey, let's drive back, and there's like explosions along the way. I would recommend it. I think it's very fun. I think it's a lot more imaginative. Well, no, not more imaginative, but it's he builds upon like what he did in Fury Road. Fury Road is definitely more of like your blockbuster action, like fun time. Furiosa is more of like a character and like world exploration. What else do you want to know in the 1 minute I have before I have to leave? You're wasting your time on us, Ryan.
Yeah, this isn't a day for yeah, I mean, I don't know. You
Is it a
say
movie that pseudo media journalists can milk the hell out of in YouTube thumbnails?
yeah, pretty much. Sure, I
okay,
would say so.
cool. That's all I had to know. Okay.
IMAX necessary.
IMAX preferred. You don't have to, but
How
it
much
looks good and it sounds good.
Final question, how much desert did this movie take place in?
Oh, all the desert. It's just
Okay.
dust
Phew.
everywhere. Also, I
Thanks,
realized that
man.
George Miller is the guy who did Happy Feet and Babe. So he went from
True.
pigs and well, he'd also did the first movie I think he did was Mad Max. So we went from Mad Max to pigs to penguins back to Mad Max.
And he did the two sequels. He did
Yeah. And Fury
whatever.
Road.
Yeah. So he's done four. Well, he's done five official Mad Max movies, four of them that actually have Mad Max. Cool. Well, ladies and gentlemen, go have a lovely day. I'm sure. I don't know. I don't know if anybody says that in Furiosa, but who cares? It's a lovely day without Unfrosted.
Shut up.
Mars on Life is a podcast co-hosted by Sebastian Shug, Ryan Mancini, Andrew Martinez, and Matt Fernandez. If you like this episode, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite shows, as Mars on Life is available on Anchor, Radio Public, iHeartRadio, Audible, Spotify, and Podchaser. Find us on Instagram at Mars on Life Show to keep up with the latest news, episodes, and gratuitous updates on the Red Planet. Have a question, comment, or request? Email us at marsonlife@gmail.com, and we'll promptly get back to you. This show's artwork, titled Happy Mars, was drawn by Zachary Erberich. Our show's regular intro and outro music is Space Explorers by the one and only Kevin MacLeod. Thank you for listening, and always remember, if you keep going, you'll make it to Mars.